In the class that we're about to start, we'll be dealing with verses 64 to 71. These are an incredible treasure chest of nectar. Actually, they're very, very wonderful verses. Here, Prabhupada, the previous acharyas, and Krishna are offering us a limitless feast of devotional meditations, inspirations, practical advice, you name it, it's in these verses. They're very, very wonderful. The most torturous thing about this is we have an hour and a half to talk this nectar. Anyway, we will do our best. But I sincerely advise you to spend a lot of time with these verses in your own time. They're very powerful. Probably after the exams, when you can do it for relishment rather than for study purposes, you know, exam purposes. Anyway, let's dive head on into the nectar. We'll start by reading verse 64. Here Krishna says, "Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very, very beautiful insight on both this verse and the whole Bhagavad Gita. I'd like to share it with you. It's from Bhurajan Prabhu's Surendranta Me, if you'd like to reference it later and read it at leisure. It's on page 355. The six chapters teaching Gyan have reached their completion. These six chapters of the Shastra Sri Gita are jewels of spiritual education. They form part of a treasure chest containing the rarest secret of bhakti. The first six chapters dealing with karma form the golden lower part of the chest, and the third six chapters dealing with Gyan form its gem-studded cover. The bhakti found within is the most precious treasure in the three worlds. It has the power to bring Sri Krishna under control. It shines brilliantly as the most excellent of precious jewels. The key to attaining this jewel is a pair of verses on the cover of the treasure chest, the sacred 64 syllables beginning Mammana Bhava, verses 65-66. Seeing his dear friend Krishna silently deliberating on Gita Shastra with its deep meanings, the Lord felt his heart melt like butter out of compassion. And he said, "My dear friend Krishna, I will now speak the essence of this entire Shastra. You don't have to exert yourself any more with this troublesome deliberating." So it's so beautiful that in this verse 64, Krishna is saying, okay, you've broken your head over this whole thing enough. I'm just going to give it to you on a plate now. The real nectar is in the next two verses I'm about to speak. So it's in this mood of compassion towards a friend that Krishna is speaking, verses 65-66. The friend, the real friend of Krishna, as explained by the acharyas, is the preacher. In fact, it is said of the nine processes of devotional service, Sakya and Atmana Vedana can only really be practiced by the Parivrajakacharya, by the person whose life's concern is to preach the glories of Krishna. Okay, so we can understand that Krishna is very much a person. He's a supreme person. Prabhupada makes a very beautiful point in a Bhagavatam class he gave in 1971 about this. He's talking as if he's Krishna. "I am disclosing this most confidential part of my instruction unto you, istosi, because I love you. Istosi me dutamiti, because I am confident that you are my confidential friend. Dritam iti tato vakshyamiti hitam. Therefore I am disclosing this to you." Krishna does not say everyone, sarva-dhammam parityajya, only to a selected devotee. Because unless one is very highly elevated devotee, he cannot accept this proposition. He is puffed up with his material contaminated life. That's all. I am this, I am that, I am this, I am that. Why should I surrender? So this is very, very beautiful that Prabhupada is revealing to us that this verse is actually a very highly elevated state. To attain this, to be able to practice this, is a very high state. And that it's only possible for those who are Krishna's friends. And Krishna will give the potency necessary to follow this instruction to those who he feels confident about. This is an interesting point. So when we are very committed to our sadhana, our service, we see that as the essence of our lives, then Krishna will have faith in us. The process is two-way. Not that we have faith only in Krishna, but Krishna has to have faith in us also. So when he has faith in us, oh yes, this one's proven himself, this one's serious, then he will give us the shakti, the potency, to actually take full advantage of this verse and to live in this world of names purely as his servant, purely for his satisfaction. In his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, it's in the second canto, 9th chapter, 35th purport, Prabhupada also says some interesting things. He tells us a little about the mystery of this most confidential knowledge that Krishna is going to speak in 65-66. He says, "The vision of the devotees is not ordinary. It is purified by the process of devotional service. In other words, as the universal elements are both within and without, similarly, the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes, entourage, etc., as they are revealed in the revealed scriptures, or as performed in the Vaikuntha lokas far, far beyond the material cosmic manifestation, are factually being televised to the heart of a devotee. The man with a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand, although by material science one can see things far away by means of television. Factually, the spiritually developed person is able to have the television of the kingdom of God always reflected within his heart. That is the mystery of the knowledge of the personality of Godhead. The Lord can award anyone and everyone liberation, mukti, from the bondage of material existence, yet he rarely awards a privilege of love of Godhead, as confirmed by Narad, muktim dadate kahichit smena bhakti yogam. This transcendental devotional service of the Lord is so wonderful that the occupation keeps the deserving devotee always wrapped in psychological activities without deviation from the absolute touch. Thus love of Godhead developed in the heart of a devotee is a great mystery." So here again, we read this, Prabhupada said this in the something we read from him last week, this wrapped in psychological activities, Krishna actually enters into the intelligence, into the network of the intelligence of his devotee, and he's always prompting him with memory of him, thoughts about how to serve him. So here again, Prabhupada is talking about this being wrapped in psychological activities. A little bit different than our mental state of being wrapped in anxiety and fear. This is from, it's very, very beautiful. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, 9th chapter, 35th verse, Prabhupada's purport. So we can understand that these verses are not for neophytes that we're about to discuss. They're very high-level verses and certainly something we should be striving for. We want to attain this. So what does it mean for us at our present level of consciousness? Prabhupada very kindly explains that in his purport on verse 64. We'll start from page 849, three lines down. At the end of the 9th chapter, which is entitled Most Confidential Knowledge, Krishna has said, "Mammana, just always think of me." The same instruction is repeated here to stress the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. This essence is not understood by a common man, but by one who is actually very dear to Krishna, a pure devotee of Krishna. This is the most important instruction in all Vedic literature. What Krishna is saying in this connection is the most essential part of knowledge, and it should be carried out not only by Arjuna, but by all living entities. So we'll find that this first two lines of the 65th verse of 18 are exactly the same as the first two lines of 9:34. It's exactly the same instruction. It's the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes we have a tendency to put the emphasis on 1866, But here, Prabhupada, in his mercy, is pointing out that it's impossible to follow that instruction unless you love Krishna. So how do we come to love Krishna? By absorbing our mind in him, by chanting about him, hearing about him. And the more we hear about a person, the more we become attracted. And the more we become attracted, the more we find that we are attached. Isn't it? It's a natural progression. So here we have to always remember that the two verses are the keys to prem, not one verse. 1865, 1866. So let's have a read of Govinda Dev's famous 65th verse. Here he says, "Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend." So Krishna is telling us that if we want to go back to him, all we have to do is three simple things. Always think of him, become his devotee, worship him, and offer homage to him. Srila Prabhupada's purport on this verse is one of the most powerful in Bhagavad Gita. I'd like to have a look at it. I always find with Prabhupada's purports that where there's something very, very dear to Govinda, it's also very dear to Prabhupada. And it seems to evoke a very special ecstasy in Prabhupada. And it's very evident in his purports. It's very, very beautiful. It's like you can understand the relationship of, the intense relationship of love between Prabhupada and Krishna just by reading Prabhupada's purports. So here he is saying, the most confidential part of knowledge is that one should become a pure devotee of Krishna and always think of him and act for him. One should not become an official meditator. Life should be so molded that one will always have the chance to think of Krishna. One should always act in such a way that all his daily activities are in connection with Krishna. He should arrange his life in such a way that throughout the 24 hours he cannot but think of Krishna. And the Lord's promise is that anyone who is in such pure Krishna consciousness will certainly return to the abode of Krishna, where we will be engaged in the association of Krishna face to face. This most confidential part of knowledge is spoken to Arjuna because he is a dear friend of Krishna. Everyone who follows the path of Arjuna can become a dear friend to Krishna and attain the same perfection as Arjuna. Very, very beautiful. So just in this little section here, you can, Prabhupada is, it's almost like a pulsation. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Prabhupada must have said Krishna 7 or 8 times in these few sentences. It's just an indication of his preoccupation at this time. His mind is fixed on his Supreme Lord. Baladev Vijayabhushan also has something very beautiful to say in relation to this verse. Once again, it's Rambojan Prabhu's Surrender Unto Me, page 357. And he's speaking as if Krishna is speaking. "As explained before, if you develop the qualities of always thinking of me and so on, you will certainly come to me, who am your beloved friend Krishna, the son of Devaki. I have qualities such as being dark blue like a dark blue lotus flower, and I appear in a human form. You will not go to some other form of mine like the thousand-headed Purusha, the thumb-sized supersoul, Lord Nrisimha or Lord Varaha. This is my vow, that in truth I will give you possession even of myself, your friend." The Nanatha Bhaga defines the word satyam as a vow and the true facts of a case. Yet Arjuna replies to Krishna, "You are from Mathura. Even though you've made a vow, it does not destroy my doubt." People in Mathura don't have a good reputation of keeping their vows, apparently. So Arjuna is not impressed that Krishna has said this. But then Krishna says in reply, "Then I say this, you are very dear to me, and the affectionate people of Mathura do not deceive those who are dear to them. What to speak of deceiving one who is most dear? He to whom I am very dear is also very dear to me." In other words, I'm going to say what I'm saying, I'm going to do. So what relevance does all of this have for us? What do we get from what Krishna is saying here? It's very sweet to hear. Give us an idea of where we're going and what we're wanting. But what does it mean at our level? I'd like to read a few things from Srila Prabhupada in relation to this. They give us some insight in how we can prepare our hearts, make our hearts a little more ready for this platform. The first one is from a lecture that Prabhupada gave on this verse in Hyderabad in 65. We cannot think of anyone unless we love him. If you love somebody, then you can think of him always. You can't get him out of your mind. Like lover and beloved, say one boy and a girl, they're in love. So both of them think of each other always. When shall we meet again? When shall we meet again? So similarly, manmana bhava mad bhakto. You can become a devotee of Krishna. You can think of Krishna always, provided you have developed love for Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena. By bhakti, you can develop your love for Krishna. That is required. This is the beginning of prem. Always think of me. This is the beginning of prem. Krishna prem is there. Nitya siddha Krishna bhakti sadhya kabunai. It is not that by artificial means we are getting Krishna prem. It is already there. But just like the attraction for young man and young woman, it comes at a certain stage. Similarly, if you develop your Shravanam Kirtanam, then that Krishna Prem will be aroused automatically because it's already there. It's very sweet. Powerful. And there's also something I wanted to read from a Madhya Purport on this. This is from Madhya Leela from Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 8, 139 Purport. So here Prabhupada is saying, as Bhagavad Gita 1865 confirms, one should engage in transcendental worship in order to become fit for being attracted by Krishna the All-Attractive. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Since every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, Krishna is naturally attractive. But due to the material covering, one's attraction for Krishna is checked. One is not usually attracted by Krishna in the material world, but as soon as one is liberated from material conditioning, he is naturally attracted. Therefore it is said in this verse, Sava Chitakashaka, everyone is naturally attracted by Krishna. This attraction is within everyone's heart, and when the heart is cleansed, that attraction is manifested. Jetodapanamajanam, Bhava Mahadabhagni Nivapanam. So I wanted to read this little section for you from this Madhya Purport because it makes it very clear that the whole purpose of us performing sadhana bhakti is to make us fit to become attracted to Krishna. Huh? Sometimes we get preoccupied with becoming purified, you know. But, you know, what is, I mean, it's a pretty dry thing to talk about being purified. We purify water, you know, we purify our clothes, purify our body. You know, it's not such an interesting thing. So it's important to remember that the whole purpose of us practicing sadhana bhakti and becoming purified is so that we become attracted to Krishna. We have the adhikar to be attracted once again to him and to fall in love with him. Verse 66 is a second key needed to unlock the treasure chest of Krishna Prem. Here Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you all from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Now Krishna instructed Uddhava in the same way in Srimad Bhagavatam 11:29-34. And this verse from Bhagavatam is quoted in Madhya Leela, chapter 22, verse 103. And what I'd like to do is to read the two verses as it's given originally in Bhagavad Gita and then as it's given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is a very, if you ever have time, this is one of the most blissful things you can do, is to read Bhagavad Gita, find the relevant verses in Uddhava Gita, and then find how they're reflected in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then you'll see the different levels of realization for the verses from Bhagavad Gita. It's a very beautiful exercise and very, very much nourishes the heart and gives you confidence and that Bhagavad Gita is the seed to Krishna Prem. So in 66, Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. In the same verse, he translates in Madhya Lila, the living entity who is subjected to birth and death attains immortality when he gives up all material activities, dedicates his life to the execution of my order, and acts according to my directions. In this way, he becomes fit to enjoy the spiritual bliss derived from exchanging loving mellows with me. It's very beautiful. Yeah. The first one was just straight from 1866 of Bhagavad Gita. And then the way that Prabhupada has given it in CC is from Madhya 22, 103. It's a verse from Bhagavatam where he's speaking 1866 to Uddhava. And then the way that Prabhupada has translated it here. It's very beautiful. Srimad Bhagavatam verse reference is 11:29:34. It's one of the things I'll be doing in Bhakti Vaibhav, is an analytical comparison between Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita. It's nectar. Okay. So, I'd like to begin elaboration on this verse by looking at different sections of Prabhupada's purport in 66. I'll be jumping around a little bit, but there's some quite amazing information here, so please forgive me. We will start about six lines down into the purport. Here Prabhupada says, now in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. Three lines down. One may think that unless he is free from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts it is here said that even if one is not free from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically free. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities. With faith and love, one should surrender unto him. And then right at the end of the purport, last four lines, Prabhupada is saying, the particular words used here, Mashucha, don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry, are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and surrender simply to Krishna, but such worry is useless. So the idea is that we have to give up all conception that our advancement is going to be the result of our endeavor. The only useful thing about us endeavoring is that it attracts the compassion of Krishna. It actually has nothing to do with our advancement, except for that. I chanted 32 rounds today, therefore I'm more advanced than everybody else. I go to Mangalati every day, so I'm very advanced. It's not true. It's not the reality. If our mentality is right, and we are attempting to follow the process, despite all our faults, Krishna will be attracted to this little jiva struggling down here. He will show his compassion, and that compassion will yield the advancement. It's a gyan misconception. It's a contamination of gyan if we think at any time, I am responsible for my advancement. We're not. We are responsible for our endeavor, for the purity of our mentality and our desire, but that's as far as it goes. The rest is in Krishna's court. It's actually a waiting game. We're basically waiting. We should stay active while we're waiting. keep striving. But we have to attract Krishna's mercy. And that is not so much done by our activities, but by the way we do our activities, by our mentality, our mood. These are the things that attract Krishna. Not that you make a beautiful bouquet for Radharani, and you go out very proudly, push everybody out the side, give the pujari your bouquet. You know? You're not going to be impressed. You may make a simple, simple offering, but your heart is properly situated, your mind is properly situated, your mood, everything is proper. Krishna will be more pleased with that. So this is a very nice point, and one that's very important. Don't worry about your material circumstance. Don't worry about your anathas in the sense of being preoccupied with them, thinking they're you. They're not. They're completely separate from you. Concentrate on the real you and desire to attract Krishna's mercy. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse also adds a further sweetness to Prabhupada's encouragement. And here he's presenting this. They do this quite a lot, actually, both Baladeva Vijayabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. They like to have conversations between Arjuna and Krishna. It makes for very sweet reading. So here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, well, Krishna says, previously I told you that you did not have the qualification for the most excellent unalloyed devotion to me. At that time, in 727, I said, whatever you do, whatever you eat. And I told you that your qualification was for Kama Mishra Bhakti. Now, however, by my special mercy, I have given you the qualification for unalloyed bhakti. I have violated my own rule that unalloyed devotion may only be obtained when somehow or other one receives the mercy of my pure devotee, just as I will violate my own promise while fighting with Bhishma. So he's saying, okay, I'm giving it to you. There are three things from Prabhupada's purports in various places where he's trying to convince us that not surrendering to Krishna is a crazy waste of time. I'd like to read the three to you. Because sooner or later we're going to have to do it. Some birth or another we're going to have to do it. But we keep waiting. Well, later I'll do it. I've got things to do. But Prabhupada is going to really try very hard to convince us, no, we should do it now. The first one is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 13th chapter, verse 44 in purport. Rama wanted to bewilder Krishna, who bewilders the entire universe. The whole universe is under Krishna's mystic power, Mama Maya Dharatyaya, but Brahma wanted to mystify him. The result was that Brahma himself was mystified, just as one who wants to kill another may himself be killed. In other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. Instead of defeating Krishna, Brahma himself was defeated, for he could not understand what Krishna was doing. Since Brahma, the chief person within this universe, was so bewildered, what is to be said of so-called scientists and philosophers? Savadamam prityatya mamekam sharanam braja. We should give up all our tiny efforts to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements he proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna is liberated, free from Krishna Maya. The power of Krishna is just like a government that one cannot overcome. First of all, there are laws. Then there's the police power. And beyond that is the military power. Therefore, what is the use of trying to overcome the power of the government? Similarly, what is the use of trying to challenge Krishna? Second one, this is from Science of Self-Realization, chapter 6. Again, on the principle, we can't avoid surrender. Whether you surrender to monarchy, democracy, aristocracy, or dictatorship, you have to surrender. That is a fact. Without surrender, there is no life. It is not possible. So we are educating people to surrender to the Supreme, wherefrom you get all protection. Just as Krishna says, Savadamam parityatya mamekam sharanam braja. No one can say, no, I am not surrendered to anyone, not a single person. The difference is only where he surrenders. The ultimate surrendering object is Krishna. Therefore in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Krishna says, Bahnam Jamanamante Janavamam Prabhadyate. After surrendering to so many things, birth after birth, when one is factually wise, he surrenders unto me. Such a Mahatma is very rare. And the third impetus for surrendering is taken from a lecture that Prabhupada gave in Los Angeles in 69. Prabhupada always equates surrendering with happiness and not surrendering with misery. He always equates these two. Here he says, you give up this searching for your happiness in your own way by transmigrating from one kind of life to another, one position to another. You just take shelter of me, and I will take charge of you. This is the whole proposition of Bhagavad Gita. This is Krishna consciousness. One has to give up searching for happiness according to his own plan. He has to submit himself to Krishna, who will take charge, and he will give all the happiness that you desire. Okay, are we convinced? This is the question. Raise your hands if you are convinced, in theory. Okay, in theory. How many of us are convinced in theory? Okay, in theory we're pretty much convinced. How many of us are trying to be convinced practically? Half hand. Okay, so what we're going to do right now is go down to Srila Prabhupada and the Samadhi. Because for us, surrendering to Krishna means surrendering to Guru and Gauranga in the form of Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya. So it will be a personal exercise. Those who are ready to throw themselves at his feet and say, I'm yours, do with me what you want, you can do that. Those of us who are not quite at that point, we may have more reserved prayers. But all of us should go down there now to Srila Prabhupada, probably about 5-10 minutes. Maybe we make sure we're back here by 10:30 to finish this class. But just go down there, spend some time with Prabhupada, either surrender to him, pray to have the desire to surrender to him, or pray to have the desire to surrender to him. Okay, let's see how we go. Any comments on your exercise? You should have. Well, we have. That's an interesting question. Did everybody hear it? What is the state of those who thought they had surrendered but obviously haven't? The point is that surrender is an ongoing process. It's actually a minute-by-minute process. At any time, we can decide not to be the surrendered. So there are different degrees of surrender. Obviously, we have to be surrendered to take initiation. We have to be surrendered to take on further austerities for the preaching mission, all those kind of things. So it's not a one-off situation. It's something that's ongoing and it has different levels. So, and we will feel that. You feel that in devotional service. Krishna never lets you, if you're serious, if you're not serious, it's a different matter. But if you're serious, Krishna will never let you be comfortable. He'll never think that now I'm advanced, now I can relax and sit back. He will never let you do it. He doesn't even let the gopis do it, let alone us. So always he will keep us striving. He always keep reminding us that we still have some ways to go. But there are different, you know, levels of surrender there. Not that we're not surrendered, but it's a level of surrender. Radhana Swami gave a very wonderful class on this verse on 1866. And the class was entitled The Topmost Surrender of the Residents of Braj. So there, even from the title of this tape, we can understand that there are different levels of surrender. And the topmost is that of the residents of Braj, in particular the gopis. Okay, so let's move on. In reality, Krishna has finished speaking his Bhagavad Gita with the 66th verse. It's more or less concluded his instructions. But still, he'd like to give us some guidance now what we should do with this precious information, the teachings he's given, and what we should expect from them by our various interactions with them. So this information he gives us in verses 67 to 71. Let's read them as a block. 67. Uh-huh. Yeah, here he's just basically he's going to give us guidance how we should use the information that he's given us previously, the teachings he's given us previously. And he's also giving us some idea of what we can expect from our various interactions with his teachings here. So 67 on, this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. For one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. And I declare that he who studies this sacred conversation of ours worships me by his intelligence. And one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the auspicious planets where the pious dwell. So I'd like to go back and have a look at different aspects of these verses. We'll start with 67. I'd like to read you something that Prabhupada has to say on this. This is from a Bhagavad Gita lecture spoken in 71. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he knows very well that there will be so many rascals who are envious of him. Because Bhagavad Gita is a very popular book of profound knowledge, everyone is trying to prove his own theory through the medium of Bhagavad Gita, trying to exclude Krishna. They want to kill Krishna. It's demoniac. Anyone who is trying to kill Krishna, he's a demon. So to warn devotees from these demons, this sloka was spoken by Krishna himself. Also, Gita Mahatmya says some interesting things. It's the Gita Mahatmya by Vyasadeva. He also says some interesting things about how people who are not qualified in terms of faith or lack of envy, how they interact with the Gita. And the fact that it's only faith really is the only qualification needed. So this is verse 71, 74, 5, 6. One who neither recites nor hears the Gita, which is the embodiment of ambrosia, drops nectar from his hand in order to drink poison. In the recitation of the Gita, there is no consideration of high or low birth. Only the faithful are qualified to recite the Gita. Because of all knowledge, the Gita is the embodiment of the Absolute. A person who out of egotism or pride vilifies the Gita or criticizes the Gita will have to reside in ghastly hell up to the time of the great universal cataclysm. That fool who is inflated with egotism insults the purport of the Gita must remain boiling in oil in the hell known as Kumbhipaka up until the annihilation at the end of the next millennium. So it's another reason why we don't give confidential information from the Gita whimsically. Because if we give it to people who aren't faithful, who have envious tendencies, and then they hear a little of what you say and they blaspheme, then this is their destination. So out of compassion for them, we keep it superficial. With such people, perhaps we'll give them prasad, ask them how they are. Huh? But we have to be careful in our preaching not to implicate them in further disastrous situations. So Krishna says here, for one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed. And at the end, he will come back to me. So how is that? How does that work? There's some interesting things said here. I'd like to read another verse from Gita Mahatmya. It's verse 72. It's very beautiful. Having discussed the knowledge of the Gita and drinking its ambrosia, people afflicted by the misery of this mundane deathly plane can take refuge in devotion under the Supreme Lord and become truly happy. It's beautiful. So we have heard of the Gita, and we do have our miseries, we do have our difficulties, but just by this hearing of Gita, we'll be encouraged to take refuge of Krishna, and that act will be our true happiness. Prabhupada also explains in many places, I'll just read one or two to you this morning, but he explains in many places why the preacher, the person who preaches Gita to his devotees, is so dear. I'll just read a little bit to you. So it's basically because if we preach, the nature of the material realm is ignorance. And ignorance is not very pleasant to deal with, especially when you stir it. If you disturb ignorance, you have trouble usually. So those who are preachers, they know this, that you face a lot of criticism as a preacher. And you face a lot of difficulties and a lot of danger. So this is the reason, not just because you're preaching Gita, but the fact that you are doing this means naturally there will be difficulties, there will be obstacles. But the preacher is prepared to accept them. And for that reason, he's dear to Krishna. So the first one that I'd like to share with you is from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is in the 6th canto, 5th chapter, 39 verse. This is Daksha speaking to Narad. He's saying a few words about him. All the devotees of the Lord but you are very kind to the conditioned souls and eager to benefit others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies, or you break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee by performing these abominable actions? This is Daksha speaking to Narad. He doesn't like his preaching. So I'll read it again if you didn't catch it. And so Daksha is not impressed with Narad Muni's preaching. Of course, Narad Muni is the personification of the bhakti. So he's the highest of our preachers. His whole form is vibrating now. But Daksha is not impressed. So Daksha says, all the devotees of the Lord but you are very kind to conditioned souls and are eager to benefit others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies, or you break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable activities? It's heavy stuff, you know. But most preachers have to put up with this kind of thing. Then Prabhupada says in Purport, such are the criticisms that must be borne by the servants of Narad Muni in the disciplic succession. Through the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are trying to train young people to become devotees and return home back to Godhead by following rigid regulative principles. But our service is appreciated neither in India nor abroad in Western countries where we are endeavoring to spread this Krishna Consciousness Movement. In India, the caste Brahmins have become enemies of the Krishna Consciousness Movement because we elevate foreigners who are supposed to be mlechas and yavanas to the position of brahmanas. We train them in austerities and penances and recognize them as brahmanas by awarding them sacred threads. Thus, the caste brahmanas of India are very displeased with our activities in the Western world. In the West also, the parents of the young people who join this movement have become our enemies. We have no business creating enemies, but the process is such that non-devotees will always be inimical towards us. Nevertheless, as stated in the Shastra, our devotees should be both tolerant and merciful. Devotees engaged in preaching should be prepared to be accused by ignorant persons, and yet they must be very merciful to the fallen conditioned souls. If one can execute his duty in the disciplic succession of Narad Muni, his service will surely be recognized. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 18:68-69, for one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. There's no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. So let us continue preaching the message of Lord Krishna and not be afraid of our enemies. Our only duty is to satisfy the Lord by this preaching, which will be accepted as service by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna. We must sincerely serve the Lord and not be deterred by so-called enemies. Get you ready back, go back on the streets, Avadut. Yeah. This is from Canto 6, Chapter 5, Verse 39 in Purport. There's one more that I wanted to share with you. This is again from Bhagavatam. This is the 7th canto, 14th chapter, 42nd verse. 7:14:42. Yeah. Here we're talking at it from a different angle of vision. The common man may deride the devotee who preaches, but Krishna worships them. It's the other side of the coin. Huh? Make your choice. My dear King Yudhisthira, the brahmanas, especially those engaged in preaching the glories of the Lord throughout the entire world, are recognized and worshipped by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the heart and soul of all creation. The brahmanas, by their preaching, sanctify the three worlds with the dust of their lotus feet, and thus they are worshipable even for Krishna. As admitted by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 1869, Nachatajman manushyesu kashtya me priya krittamaha. The brahmanas preach the cult of Krishna consciousness all around the world, and therefore, although they worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord also recognizes them as worshipable. The relationship is reciprocal. The brahmanas want to worship Krishna, and similarly, Krishna wants to worship his brahmanas. So this is a sweetness. If you have a loving relationship with someone and they ask you to do something, they ask a favor of you, then even though other people may not appreciate it, even though there's austerities in the service, because someone you love, someone who's very dear to you, has asked you, hey, can you do this for me? So you do it. And because of the loving relationship with them, the way they reciprocate with you, you'll undergo all tribulations. Isn't it? You know that as a mother, Parvati. Isn't it? All of us, any of us who have loving relationships with other devotees, family members, like that, we have this experience that we will take risks. We will undergo hardships for someone we love. The externals may be very rough. There may be so many difficulties. But the internal situation will be very sweet because we're getting this reciprocation from the person we love who's asked us to do them a favor. Yeah, actually this is a very important point, that Brahman means Brahman realized. You have to know Krishna to be factually a Brahmana. It's not a matter of wearing a two-paisa thread, as Prabhupada used to say, but rather that we have to have realization of the Absolute Truth. It's more likely more than two-paisa, that's true. It's probably 10 rupees or something. Still, it's not that cheap. We have to recognize Krishna. I also, in conclusion, wanted to read a little bit from the 71st purport. There's some real food for thought here. We'll start from the beginning. In the 67th verse of this chapter, the Lord explicitly forbade the Gita's being spoken to those who are envious of the Lord. In other words, Bhagavad Gita is for the devotees only. But it so happens that sometimes a devotee of the Lord will hold open class, and in that class, not all the students are expected to be devotees. Why do such persons hold open class? It is explained here that although not everyone is a devotee, still there are many men who are not envious of Krishna. They have faith in him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such persons hear from a bona fide devotee about the Lord, the result is that they become at once free from all sinful reactions, and after that attain to the planetary system where all righteous persons are situated. Therefore, simply by hearing Bhagavad Gita, even a person who does not try to be a pure devotee attains the result of righteous activities. Thus, a pure devotee of the Lord gives everyone a chance to become free from all sinful reactions and become a devotee of the Lord. Now, it's very interesting here. The thing that fascinated me was about 4 lines from the end of the purport, where Prabhupada says, those who are righteous in performing devotional service but who are not pure can attain the planetary system of the pole star or Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj is presiding. Now, this is not only information, this is a warning. Better to strive for purity rather than be righteous. You know, there's a kind of person that goes around correcting everybody and always complaining that things are not like they should be. That is called righteous. I'm right and everybody should, you know that I'm right and maybe follow what I'm saying. So that person will be respected by Krishna before because they are following the process, but they won't enter the transcendental realm. They'll get on the tip of it, the edge of it. They'll go to Dhruvaloka. Of course, Dhruva, he was also very righteous. But he reformed himself. So by his association, we could probably do the same. But I take it not only as information here, but as a warning. Better we strive to become pure. We look at our own faults, our own limitations, turn that mentality to criticize in. And, we've got plenty of mess to clean up there. So we can work on that. And then the pure devotee, he won't go to Dhruvaloka, he'll go back to Krishna. Okay, is there any questions on this class? Yeah. He's pure now. But if you remember, many things that he did were an indication of righteousness rather than an indication of purity. For example, the way he stormed out of the temple when he wasn't allowed to sit on his father's lap. You know? And then when he wanted to avenge his brother's death and wanted to, wipe out the whole Yaksha race. So this is, we're not talking about him in purified state. He did get the mercy and became pure devotee. But because of his righteous behavior, he had to stay on Earth planet and rule. I think it was 36,000 years. Because he had a desire, he had this righteous desire, things should be done right, I'm king. So he had, because of that desire, he had to stay on the planet and rule for 36,000 years. And he has his own planet now. So it's not our aspiration. Our aspiration is to go back to Krishna. So particularly this tendency we should watch. It is a tendency of one who is well situated in their sadhana, solid in their service, and is proud of it. It's a tendency of such a person. Any questions? Yeah. I think he's more or less where he is. I don't know a lot. Actually, Dhruva Tattva I really don't know much about. But he has his own planet, and I've never read of him going anywhere else. He has the Lord as his... Yeah, that's the point. He has the Lord as his storekeeper. Well, I'm sure there's loving exchange there. It's beyond me to fathom, but I'm sure there's something there that we're not aware of. Any questions on this? The third point? Okay, let's have a look at that. Oh, you got the third or you didn't? He was trying to convince us that it's not a good idea not to surrender. So the third one you needed? Uh-huh, okay. No problem. Okay. So the first one was when Brahma tried to bewilder Krishna. And he wasn't able to. In fact, he was bewildered himself. So Krishna Prabhupada there is making the point that we should be happy with the arrangements that Krishna makes rather than try and defy them. That he'll make the best arrangements for us because after all he is the Supreme Person. He knows everything. We know very little. And he gives the example of the government, that we have the laws of the government, we have the police force of the government, we have the military of the government, so we try and go against it, we're going to be in trouble. So he was using that as an analogy, that we should maybe do things the way Krishna wants. What's the use of challenging Krishna, better to accept the arrangements that he makes for us? And then the second one was that we can't avoid the principle of surrender. It's just a matter of who we surrender to. Like we have to surrender to a rickshaw wallet to get into one of these rickshaws and go to Loy Bazaar. There's no guarantee, especially during Kartik, in peak season where everybody wants to get as fast as possible to the destination so they can pick up another customer. There's certainly no guarantee you're going to get there in one piece. So, and then, we surrender to the airlines to get us back to London or Switzerland or wherever we're going after we finish here. So everything we do, we could not live in this world without the surrender principle being active. We'd go crazy. We wouldn't be able to walk or do anything. We have to surrender to the post office to makes, you know, to get a letter from one place to another place. Like that. So Prabhupada was making that principle that, surrender is an aspect of life we live with, but it's a matter of who we surrender to. That's the essential point. Anything else on this? Yeah, because I wrote on the board that time that it will be covered today. It's covered in this question here. Yeah, that there are three levels of knowledge, and they're mentioned through this section. Okay, so maybe we'll break 5 minutes early and start again at 11:15. Yeah? Okay. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chanda Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinoda Gaura Brahmanandi. Okay, so in the second class for today, we're going to have a look at verses 72 to 78. And these verses begin with a very sweet inquiry by Krishna. Once again, we are confronted with Krishna, the person. Not so much God, but a person with sentiments. So here he says in verse 72, O son of Pritha, O conqueror of wealth, have you heard this with an attentive mind? And are your ignorance and illusions now dispelled? So Prabhupada reveals the actual mentality and mood of Krishna when he speaks these words in the first few sentences of his purport. He says here in purport to 72, the Lord was acting as a spiritual master of Arjuna. Therefore, it was his duty to inquire from Arjuna whether he understood the whole Bhagavad Gita in its proper perspective. If not, the Lord was ready to re-explain any point or the whole Bhagavad Gita if so required. So here Krishna is again showing his surrender to those who are trying to understand him and surrender to him. He's concerned. Okay, you're wanting to understand what I have to say. I said as much as I feel I have to say, but have you understood it? He's feeling responsibility. If you haven't, I'm prepared to speak it all again. I'll be following in his footsteps. So we start again on January 7th in Mayapur. Anyone's interested in taking it up? I figure I'll keep teaching it till I surrender. Maybe a few lifetimes, but I'll give it a try. Okay. So, and Arjuna, he's a very serious and sincere student. He really wants to do the right thing. So his answer in verse 73 is also very sensitive. He says, My dear Krishna, O infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt and am prepared to act according to your instructions. So when you meditate on this verse, you get a very strong feeling of humility. There's a very strong feeling of submission in these verses, that by your mercy I have understood, and now I'm ready to do whatever you tell me to do. So it's an essential principle for us to understand that to regain our memory, what are we talking about here? Remembering what we did yesterday? No. We're talking about remembering, I am Krishna's eternal servant. My happiness, my perfection lies in acting in that position as his servant. So Arjuna is saying, I've regained my memory. I now remember, yes, my happiness, my perfection lies in serving you. I've remembered that by your mercy. And now I'm firm and free from doubt. Okay, the anattas are gone. Any subtle, even subtle hints of enjoyership or controllership are gone. I'm yours. I just want to do what you say. So it's clear that he's taken 1866 to heart and he's done the needful. So what this practically means for us is explained by Srila Prabhupada in a lecture he gave in New York City in 66. And I thought to share this with you because it gives quite some food for thought, as Prabhupada most often does. Here, he's speaking as if Arjuna is speaking. Now my misgiving, my misunderstanding, it's gone by your mercy. Now I have decided to fight because you desire. That is a summum bonum of learning, that one should decide what God desires. That's all. That will make his life perfect. He should not desire anything else. He should not desire anything. His desiring capacity should not be stopped. Somebody says, don't desire, become desireless. What do we say to that? It's nonsense. Nobody can be desireless. How can he be desireless? Desire is a symptom of life. How can you stop it? It is not possible. Desireless I cannot be, but I must desire purely. That's all. I should not desire impurely. If I desire from the bodily platform of life, then my desires will be impure. That's an amazing statement. If I desire from the bodily platform of life, then my desires will be impure. And when I shall desire as the desire of the Supreme Will, then my desire is pure. So desire is not to be cut or stopped. It simply has to be purified. That's all. And what is lust? Lust means when you try to satisfy your senses. That's called lust. I was thinking of this, Amit's question some time back about what do we mean by lust. And I thought to add this here for clarification. So lust means whenever you try to satisfy your senses, that is called lust. And the same, whenever you try to satisfy Krishna's senses, that is love. Practically the same business, but personal and Krishna. So Krishna consciousness movement means we have to act everything for Krishna under proper direction. We cannot manufacture that I am doing for Krishna. That is also misleading. Therefore we require the guidance of a spiritual master. Yes, I will act according to your desire. That is bhakti. This is the difference between bhakti and karma. Karma means to fulfill my desires, and bhakti means to fulfill Krishna's desires. That's the difference. Now you make your choice, whether you want to make your desires fulfilled or you want to make Krishna's desires fulfilled. If you make your decision to make Krishna's desires fulfilled, then your life is successful. Then your life is Krishna conscious life. Krishna wants it, I must do it. I will not do it for me. That is Vrindavan. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they are trying to fulfill Krishna's desire. The cowherd boys, the calves, the cows, the trees, the flowers, the water, the gopis, the elderly inhabitants, Mother Yashoda, Nanda, they are all engaged in fulfilling Krishna's desire. That is Vrindavan. So you can turn this material world into Vrindavan, provided you agree to fulfill the desires of Krishna. Pretty deep. Something to think about. 74 to 77, spoken by Sanjay. He's a disciple of Srila Vyasadeva and a servant of Dhritarashtra. We read them as a block. So this is 74 to 77. Sanjay said, thus have I heard the conversation of two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna. And so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. By the mercy of Vyasa, I have heard these most confidential talks directly from the master of all mysticism, Krishna, who was speaking personally to Arjuna. O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure, being thrilled at every moment. O King, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. This may not seem to be terribly special information that has been given here, but Prabhupada takes text 75 to say some very, very special things. He wants to make a few points right at the end of Bhagavad Gita about the position of the Guru as a transparent via medium, the importance and effect of that. We'll have a look at some sections of the purport that make this mentality of Prabhupada very, very clear. We'll start from the beginning. Vyasa was the spiritual master of Sanjay. Then go down four lines. The spiritual master is a transparent medium, although it is true that the experience is still direct. This is the mystery of the disciplic succession. When the spiritual master is bona fide, then one can hear Bhagavad Gita directly as Arjuna heard it. And then down to the next paragraph, fourth line down. By the grace of Vyasa, Sanjay's senses were purified, and he could see and hear Krishna directly. One who directly hears Krishna can understand this confidential knowledge. If one does not come to the disciplic succession, he cannot hear Krishna. Therefore, his knowledge is always imperfect, or at least as far as understanding Bhagavad Gita is concerned. So here Prabhupada is pointing out two very essential aspects of attaining knowledge of Bhagavad Gita or any bona fide Shastra. One is that there must be a bona fide spiritual master. By bona fide, we mean that he is transparent. He has no personal desire, no personal motivation. He is living in this world of names purely for the pleasure and satisfaction of Krishna and the previous acharyas. Such a person is called transparent. And when you have a transparent piece of glass in front of you, you can see everything on the other side of the glass very, very clearly. It's direct vision. So that's what Prabhupada is saying here, that when that spiritual master is a transparent via medium, a pure representative of the spiritual master, the founder acharya and the previous acharyas, then we can understand and hear Bhagavad Gita directly. So Prabhupada is definitely a transparent via medium, and that is not a sentimental statement. That is evidenced by the fact that when he came to the West, it was recorded that there were over 700 translations of Bhagavad Gita available in the Western world, but they did not make devotees. Those Bhagavad Gitas did not make devotees. Why? Because they the Bhagavad Gita was being used to propagate another person's ideas. But when Prabhupada came and he gave Bhagavad Gita as Krishna spoke it, as Krishna meant it, he acted as a transparent via medium, then it was like Krishna was directly speaking to the people of America. He's still speaking to the people of all sorts of countries all over the world. Huh? And then they could understand what Krishna was saying by the mercy of Prabhupada. Another aspect of the pure devotee's mercy is indicated by the fact that little last section we read about how Sanjaya's senses were purified by the grace of Vyasadeva. So it wasn't as if Vyasadeva came and put his hand on his head and zap, you know, he was purified and everything was fine. No, Vyasadeva, like the rest of our disciplic succession, they give the process. They give instruction. So by the process and instruction, our senses are purified. So when you put these two together, you have the Shastra coming through a pure, transparent via medium, and we are following the process and teachings of that transparent via medium, and our senses have become purified. When you put those two together, then you can understand Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's very powerful what Prabhupada is saying here. The two things are required. Not that, I've been reading these books for years, my life hasn't changed, these books are not for me. Huh? This is a very unfortunate statement. So if we understand the depths of what Prabhupada is saying in his poor books, we say them seriously, take them seriously, then it's very, very wonderful. I had a darshan with Mahavishnu Maharaj last night about how to study Bhagavad Gita and how to study Bhagavatam. And it was so very, very wonderful. And he was explaining quite some length that I can't go into now. But one thing he did stress, which I found very interesting, was the importance of also reading Prabhupada's word for word. And when I have noticed that in my study of Bhagavad Gita this semester, that many of the purport seeds, many of the points that Prabhupada makes in the purport, the seeds are in the word to word. It's just come to me spontaneously. So it's very wonderful if we can take the full book when we read, just don't read the verse and like the translation and the purports, but we read the verse, we read the word for word, we read the translation, we read the purport. And we do it with a desire to understand. What's that? Definitely. That would be more than 4 months nectar. Yeah, so I just thought to highlight that because I found that was really quite something, what Prabhupada is saying here. In 78, Asanjaya is making a prediction. He says here, wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. So as Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport, this statement is in reply to the opening question in the first verse of Bhagavad Gita, where Dhritarashtra asks, what's happening? So basically, in the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya is replying, well, you guys have got no chance. Sorry, but that's a story. So let's have a look. Prabhupada explains it better than I can. In the beginning of the purport, he says, Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra's. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons. They had 11 oxakunis of soldiers, welfare, activity that was on their side, whereas the Pandavas had 7. So much less in terms of facility for the battle. And Dhritarashtra was very hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhisma, Drona, Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, you are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where there is Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune. He directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Oxakinis, yeah. Yeah, 11. The Kuras had 11. They managed to capture quite a large army. Huge number of men, horses, elephants, you name it, they had it. And the Pandavas, 7. By comparison, is quite a lot less. But they had Krishna on the side. This is also another important point for us, that regardless of the material odds, we should never be discouraged. Because if we are Krishna conscious, we needn't be fearful, we needn't be discouraged. Jai! Never be concerned with the externals. Take them into consideration to make your plans and all that kind of thing, but don't let them influence your enthusiasm or your desire to serve Prabhupada. Because if Krishna's on side, everything's on side. The material energy is his. Okay. So I wanted to explore this verse a little by asking questions. Let's see how we go. Why will there be extraordinary power? And what do we mean by extraordinary power? Why would there be extraordinary power? And what do we mean by it? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is a very nice point. You ever notice Krishna doesn't have muscles? He doesn't need muscles to kill people. He's just Krishna. He can do anything he likes. He can maintain a very beautiful form. Doesn't need muscles. And he can do the needful, regardless of the size of the demon. Any other points? What do you think? What is this? What is this opulence that we're talking about here? What kind of opulence are we talking? Or power? What kind of power is this? Yeah. It's a very nice point. Thank you very much. This potency, this power, is coming through Dharma. There's a statement from the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami that Dharma protects Dharma. If you act according to Krishna's instruction, you'll be protected. Dhamma protects Dhamma. Sometimes we find that devotees will find themselves in difficulty and they will do things not quite dharmically. They think, well, I need to do this because of the time, place, circumstance. But one who has faith in Krishna won't do like that. One who knows a Shastra won't do like that. Because they know that the real power, Krishna, Daivi Shakti, internal energy power, it comes through following Dhamma. And we have seen as a movement that where we have tried change up and all this kind of thing, the result has been disastrous for the preaching. Both for the enthusiasm of the devotees within the movement and definitely in terms of our relationships with those outside. Isn't it? So this Dhamma protects Dhamma is a very essential principle to follow, especially if we are doing the work of Brahmins, if we are involved with any kind of preaching, especially preaching that involves fundraising. We should be very, very careful to maintain this principle. Okay. Well, what do we mean by opulence? Another thing that's always there where Krishna and Arjuna is there is opulence. What do we mean by that? Any clues? Are we talking dwarkadish or what are we talking here? Opulence of bhakti? Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. Any other thoughts? Yeah. Very nice point. Yeah, unlimited opulence is there. Krishna will give us unlimited opulence if we're going to use it for his preaching mission. And this is a very important point. That if we are following in Prabhupada's footsteps, for ourselves living very simply, we don't need a lot. We just need a place to sleep, something to eat, something to wear. It's basically what we need. Not what we want, maybe, but it's what we need. And if we can minimize that and utilize everything we have for Krishna, we'll find we're never in want. We'll never be in want. It's very important for us as preachers, especially if we're taking on our own projects or we're heading up a project, to have firm faith in this principle. Because otherwise you'll become very much an anxiety and you'll try looking for shortcuts, which will create problems for your spiritual life and for the project you're working for. Why is victory assured and what does victory mean? There will be victory. Certainly there will be victory. So why is it assured and what does it mean anyway? What's that? It means to transcend. That's an interesting point. That is true victory. If it, the end result of it is that you fall madly in love with Krishna. Yeah? The essence of transcendence. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, Nari. This is a very subtle point. Victory is what happens when it's the result of Krishna's desire. Huh? When the result is Krishna's desire, that is victory. That's very deep. Thank you. Any other thoughts? Yeah, otherwise it may be a victory of false ego. It may be externally look wonderful, but may not be so much in tune with Krishna's desire. That's an interesting point. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah, this is also a very wonderful point that Subhalakshana is making, Sumangada is making here. That if we are surrendered to Krishna and he is using us as his instrument, he is the Supreme Person. So obviously everything that we do will be perfect. The externals may not be perfect. That may be part of his plan. He put Arjuna into illusion. He put Yudhisthira into illusion. It was their perfection, though his instrument. To most others, it doesn't look like perfection, but it is. So we have to be aware that we're not always talking externals. You know, we have to see the difference between internal and external when we're talking perfection, transcendental perfection. Krishna may use us in a way that may not even be pleasing to people. We have to be open to it. That's why it's so very, very difficult to surrender wholly to Krishna. We really do have to be at least at Brahma Buddha platform because we have to be above care for profit adoration distinction, for being criticized by others. All of this we'd have to have absolutely no interest or concern with. Otherwise, if he puts in this a situation that he wants to use us as a pawn to do something that's needed but won't be liked very much by others, how are we going to feel about that if we're not on that level? It is a very high platform. This 1866 is very high. We have to be 100% in love with, not 100%, but very much in love with Krishna to do this. And regardless of what our senses say, regardless of what our mind, intelligence say, we basically have to be saturated with Krishna to be able to pull this one off. Yashoda. Oh, that's very nice. Thank you. Yashoda is saying that in Uddhava Gita, Krishna explains that true victory is conquering the lower self. That's also, yeah? So that the real you can actually manifest and be happy and do something useful. That's very nice, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's why I put so much stress on this Dharma, protects Dharma. It will automatically be there. Thank you for raising that. Yeah. Okay, so I'd like to hear a little bit from Prabhupada now. Hari Hari Bol, Jai. This is great. Thank you for coming, Ananda. I know how busy you've been, especially all these big festivals and everything. Did it go well last night? Did the Diwali one go well?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So I thought to just share with you a few thoughts that Prabhupada makes about these different points. The first one I'd like to share with you is on the quality of power. Why a devotee is more powerful even than a fully fledged yogi. So this is from a Vrindavan lecture Prabhupada gave in 74. And it was on the Srimad Bhagavatam verse. Amrish, he was neither yogi, nor could he display any yogic perfection, but he was protected by Krishna, by the Sudarshan Chakra. Vaishnavas do not require to practice any yogic power to become materially powerful. He doesn't require. Simply his surrender to Krishna makes him all-powerful. This is the position of a Vaishnava. Vaishnavas, they do not care for all these yogic powers. They depend on Krishna. And who can be a greater yogi? Krishna is Yogeshwara. So if one takes shelter of Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic power, why should he bother about practicing yoga? A poor man may try to earn money by hard labor, but one who is a very rich man's son, why should he labor? The father's money is sufficient. Similarly, a devotee, a sincere devotee, he is under the protection of Krishna. And under the protection of Krishna means under the protection of all six kinds of opulences. Riches, then strength, then reputation, wisdom, renunciation, beauty, the six kinds of opulence. This is stated here. Because if you get somehow or other Krishna's favor, then there is no question of any more profit. Sufficient profit. You have got everything. Simply be sincere to the service of Krishna, then you have got everything. There's no need of trying for this or for that. So here Prabhupada is making a very, very beautiful point and a very practical point that what's the use of endeavoring for all these skills and all this potency, these powers? Why not put your effort into learning to love Krishna? Because he's Yogeshwara, he's the master of all mystics. He has all of the opulences in full. And if you become his beloved, his dear friend, then obviously they're going to be at your disposal. You're doing his work. Have you ever seen someone who is the master of an enterprise? Maybe in a business line, owns a factory or something like that. He gives his manager really heavy instructions and then says, I'm not giving you any resources, you go and find your own, and then you do the work. Okay? Do we ever see that? Even materially, do we see that? No. We see, if the boss gives work, he gives facility. Isn't it? You're doing my work, so here's the facility. You're a businesswoman, you know it yourself. With the people that are under your care, you give them facility, isn't it? Because then they'll do the work nicely. So Krishna, he's the most intelligent businessman. He's the most intelligent of everything. So obviously, if we're doing his work, he's going to give us what we need to do his work. And to the degree that we have faith in him and put our energy, our mental energy in particular, into worrying about how to perfect our service to him, instead of worrying about where the money is going to come from, how I'm going to deal with this criticism, if we put the focus on Krishna, intensify our prayers to Krishna, then it will come a lot thicker and quicker. Because we're in connect contact with Krishna. Okay. I wanted to talk a little about what Prabhupada says about opulence also. I found this very interesting. This is from Bhagavatam's 10th canto, 2nd chapter, verse 33. So here in his pulpit, Prabhupada is saying, the opulences of a devotee are not a result of karmakanda vichara. A devotee is always protected by all of the Supreme Lord's opulences, of which no one can deprive him. Someone may take away material opulences, but they can't deprive you of spiritual. They may change channel. They may come from this direction one time, another direction another time. But because you're living in the world as Krishna's servant, or aspiring to be Krishna's servant, somehow or other Krishna will give you the facility that you want. Thus a devotee cannot be defeated by any opponent. A devotee, therefore, should not deviate knowingly from the path of devotion. The adherent devotee is assured of all protection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then on victory, what Prabhupada has to say about victory, he's just saying that it's actually assured for the devotee. And this is very important information for us as we leave this Bhakti Shastri course and go back to our respective fields of activity. This is from a conversation in 75. If the preachers in our Krishna consciousness movement are sincere devotees of Krishna, Krishna will always be with them because he is very kind and favorable to all his devotees. Just as Arjuna and Krishna were victorious in the battle of Kurukshetra, this Krishna consciousness movement will surely emerge victorious if we but remain sincere devotees of the Lord and serve the Lord according to the advice of the predecessor acharyas. Whole battlefield became victorious because of Arjuna. That is wanted. Our devotee must be there, and Krishna must be there. Then all opulences will come. That is the secret. Why a devotee should go to the forest for meditating or acquiring some mystic powers? He doesn't require anything if he keeps Krishna always with him. Mahavishnu Maharaj was telling me yesterday that he and his preaching, he doesn't have any separate program for collection. The whole program is preaching, straight preaching, no collection program. And they're in the middle of building a 2.5 crore temple. And he's done no independent collection for it, just by purely by preaching. So we can understand that someone who has faith in Krishna's word and acts on it, certainly all opulence comes. Of course, 2.5 crores is nothing for Krishna. It's peanuts. But in our terms, it's quite a lot of money. It's a beautiful temple that's being erected at Dwarka, solid stone, old school type temple. Pardon? No, in Dwarka, in India. Yeah, it's his base. Very amazing. Okay, I wanted to also draw your attention to a couple of sections of Prabhupada's purport. This is from a different perspective. It's more or less a summary of what Prabhupada has to say about Bhagavad Gita. So like it's summing up things. Okay, so we'll start on 860, page 864. The third paragraph on that page, 78. Yeah. Beginning of the paragraph is from Bhagavad Gita. From Bhagavad Gita, we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and by meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. The path of regulative principles according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion may be a confidential path of knowledge. But although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential. And surrender under Krishna in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. This is the essence of the 18th chapter. So twice in about eight, nine lines, Prabhupada has repeated, this is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. So we can understand, in fact, that this is the essence. And then it's very interesting what he says on page 865, the paragraph beginning, in Bhagavad Gita, five principal subject matters have been discussed. Here he enumerates them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, the living entities, eternal time, and all kinds of activities. All is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. All conceptions of the Absolute Truth, impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and any other transcendental conception exists within the category of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is an amazing sentence, this next one. Although superficially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different, nothing is different from the Supreme. But the Supreme is always different from everything. Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is that of inconceivable oneness and difference. This system of philosophy constitutes perfect knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So here we're getting back again to the idea of vision in the mode of goodness, where we see the unity in things, and we see the diversity in the unity, not that we have separatist mentality. We put everything black, white, little boxes, nothing interacting. So it's very nice that Prabhupada is pointing out, although Krishna has delineated things in five different areas of study, please remember that they're all part of the Absolute Truth and they interact. They're part of one composite whole. Let's have a look at page 456. This is a purport to chapter 9, verse 3. Prabhupada says something here that's good to remember at this stage of our studies. Sorry. Page 456, chapter 9, verse 3. So we're after the Srimad Bhagavatam quote. If we go down five lines into the purport, just after the translation of the quote. After reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. And then some 9-10 lines down from there, it is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. So we can understand from what Prabhupada is saying here that the essence of advancement, the essential ingredient of advancement, is not how much brain power we have, what our book scores are. It's none of this. It's a matter of how much faith we have in Guru and Krishna, Guru and Gauranga. Especially if we want to become instruments in the hands of the Lord, this faith is very, very important. And I wanted to actually finish off this second class for today by reading quite a long purport by Prabhupada from Madhya of Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I found it a very, very powerful note to finish our classes together with this. Very, very powerful is the final word. It's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya, chapter 4. It's the purport to verse 79. There's so much food for thought here. The Krishna consciousness movement has spread all over the world within a very short time, within 5 years, and mundane people are very much astonished at this. However, by the grace of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we understand that everything is possible by the grace of Krishna. Why does Krishna have to take 5 years? In 5 days, he can spread his name and fame all over the world like wildfire. Those who have faith in and devotion to Krishna can understand that these things happen so wonderfully by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are simply the instruments. In the fierce battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was victorious within 18 days simply because of Krishna's grace which was on his side. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, There will certainly be all opulence, victory, extraordinary power, morality. That is my opinion. Bhagavad Gita 1875. If the preachers in our Krishna consciousness movement are sincere devotees of Krishna, Krishna will always be with them because he is very kind and favorable to all his devotees. Just as Arjuna and Krishna were victorious on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, this Krishna consciousness movement will surely emerge victorious if we but remain sincere devotees of the Lord and serve the Lord according to the advice of the predecessors. The Krishna consciousness devotees must always desire to remain in the society of devotees, Bhakti Sanavas. They cannot go outside the Krishna conscious society or movement. Within the society, we must try to serve the predecessors by preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult and spreading his name and fame all over the world. If we attempt this seriously within the society, it will be successfully done. There is no question of estimating how this will happen in the mundane sense, but without a doubt, it happens by the grace of Krishna. Om Tat Sat. Okay. Any questions? The reference is a wonderful statement by Prabhupada. CC, Madhya 4, Purport to 79. Any questions on this class? Where it comes from? Epidemiologically, it means the intrinsic nature of something. The intrinsic nature of fire is to heat, to give light, and to burn. If we see something that is liquid, then we know that that's not fire. It's probably water. So we have to look at the value, the intrinsic nature of something, then we can understand its dharma. So us, our intrinsic dharma, intrinsic nature is service. So Prabhupada explains this very wonderfully in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, that if we don't serve Krishna, we will serve somebody else. Maybe our dog, maybe our family, maybe our nation. So serve somebody else. So our intrinsic nature is to serve. The perfection of our dharma is to surrender to Krishna and serve him. Does that make sense? Yeah? I can't think of a specific reference now, but it is in the beginning of, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains what is dharma. Many times in his books he will explain this. I can't think offhand, but maybe I can get a reference or two for you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting one. Worried about that, Naraya. Well, basically, when we're talking that difference, we're talking whether or not false ego is there. Of course we want dharma. Krishna wants dharma, and we're here as his servants. But we're talking about whether we are doing that activity with false ego or not. If we're in a position where it's our responsibility to ensure the dharma within the movement, within the society, then we take on our responsibility. If we have some other responsibility, and that responsibility, chastisement or whatever it is not our responsibility, then we don't get involved with it. We have to see what is our responsibility to Krishna and take it as a God-given task. For example, with myself, I was in management. I was a preacher, but I was in management. So I was caught up in a whole network of management. But I found that I didn't like that. There was no further advancement in it for me because it forced me to remain on the duality platform. As a manager, you have to see good and bad. You have to see this and that. You have to. It's part of your responsibility. So not only do we have to understand what is our nature in terms of our condition state, but we also have to be always checking what am I supposed to be doing now to bring me to closer to my transcendental nature. So I realized that it was far more beneficial for me as a person, as soul, as someone aspiring to fall in love with Krishna, that our management was not the best position for me. Especially I'm getting older, I'm a renunciate like that. So then, you know, like teaching, brahminical position is very much different. There you're looking more at the unity in things. You're looking at the diversity and the unity. You're not looking separate, separate, separate. That's more the mode of passion. And the Kshatriya is expert in that situation. So we have to look also what suits us. You know, if there's just, we find that there's a whole ocean of fault. As a chatra, you have to be concerned with it. As a manager, you have to be concerned with it. But it does things to the heart which are not very pleasant. It may be a source of purification when you're very passionate. But when through that service you're becoming purified and you're coming more to a platform of goodness, then you'd find it distasteful and you have to move on. So this is a nice question you're asking, because we have to always be looking at the situation we're in, adjusting it according to what is favorable. Because these are two very important principles of surrender. To do what is favorable for us further progressing in Krishna consciousness, and to discard what is not favorable. So we always, that's why we have to be conscious to become Krishna conscious. It's not going to happen automatically. We have to be constantly assessing. Like Gazelle was just telling me, she's made a very Krishna conscious and intelligent decision about her circumstance, which will facilitate her becoming more Krishna conscious. So we all have to do that. We all have to look at our circumstance and see what will degrade, what will improve my Krishna consciousness, and have the strength of heart to do it. No good to analyze a situation, come up with a perfect solution, and then not do it. You may get the satisfaction of having come up with a brilliant solution, but Krishna may be a little bit frustrated with you. Any other questions? Okay, so I wanted to finish this wonderful session that we've had with each other. I don't know about you, but one thing I wanted to do from my side was, first of all, to apologize if I've in any way offended you or upset you in my neophyteness or ignorance. But also to very, very much thank you, because I've learned so much from all of you. And what I would like to do now, there are two stages of what I'd like to do now. The first one is a very serious workshop. We should all take it very, very seriously, because I feel that it would be very beneficial for us. And the second thing is that please honor some of the Mahaprasad from Giriraj from yesterday, which is in this big bag here. We'll bring it out at the end of the show. So the workshop that I would like to do is called a thank you hug workshop. Okay? Because it's not that there's just a teacher and then the students and we learn everything from the teacher. But in Vedic culture, we find that when the student graduates from the Gurukul, the teacher bathes the feet of the student in gratitude for everything that they've learned from him. So I knew I wasn't going to get away with that. I would like to, but I don't think you'd let me get away with that one. So I thought at least what we could do is, if every one of us, we have learned a lot from each other. Sometimes it's been sweet, sometimes it's been sour, but both are necessary for a balanced diet and good health. So I would like all of us to hug everybody in the room in gratitude with the mantra, my favorite mantra, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garada Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Okay, let's go for it.